Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run accountsrecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you this webinar on a very interesting topic: how to improve your government and higher education RFP responses. Writing out RFPs can be a thankless task, and when you don't win a contract, you often don't find out what you did wrong. We're fortunate to have Nick Bernardo from MyGovWatch here with us today to share his insights to help companies improve their RFP response rates. This webinar is being generously sponsored by MyGovWatch. You'll get the chance to hear more about them during our program today. I want to take a quick minute to say a few words about accountsrecovery.net. Accountsrecovery.net is a news and information platform from the armed industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the armed industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use, and it's a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speaker. Nick Bernardo is and has been president of MyGovWatch.com, the DBA of NetGame Marketing, since 2003. The MyGovWatch.com portal is the company's flagship service offering and serves some of the best known large and small companies in the collection industry today. The 2018 relaunch of the site for the first time allows anyone to create a free account with pay-as-you-go options or to access detailed information on government contracts on an unlimited basis, something I do. I get an email from them every day, which is really cool. His 20-year career includes broad-based experience in business-to-business marketing, information services development, professional services marketing, third-party reselling, and nonprofit fundraising. He is also the managing member of FedCetera, a business development organization, as the term is used in federal regulations, that works with companies seeking to participate in federal contracting and subcontracting opportunities in collections. The format for today's webinar will be a presentation from Nick. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when Nick's presentation is concluded or as he's going through it, depending on the topic of the question. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. With that, let me introduce Nick Bernardo to begin his presentation. Nick?
Mike, thank you very much for the opportunity, and thank you for letting us sponsor this series of teleseminars. And this is what I think is a very interesting topic. And in perusing the list of the attendees today, I just want to thank some of our existing clients for joining us today. And there are certainly a fair number of people on this call who we love to do business with and who are very active in the government and higher education space as well. And a thing that probably I do share with a lot of people on this call is that I have spent a lot of time with the bid writing process over the years. So there's a book that was written several years ago called Outliers, written by a person by the name of Malcolm Gladwell. And the concept of the book was that you could explain certain things through statistics. And he had a chapter in that book dedicated to what he calls the 10,000 hour rule. Basically, this notion that if you want to become an expert in anything, do it for 10,000 hours. So he considers that the key to success in any field, practicing a specific task that can be accomplished with 20 hours of work a week for 10 years. And I can attest to everyone on this call that I've easily spent 20,000 hours involved in bid writing over the last 25 years. And fortunately, that 10,000 hour rule works well for bid writing. It does not, unfortunately, work as well for parenting or golf. So I may have to write Mr. Gladwell a letter about that, but at least it does apply to bid writing. So
one out of three ain't bad.
Well, that's not bad at all. In the majors, that would send you to the Hall of Fame, that's for sure. So in this teleseminar, we're going to talk about 12 specific ways that you can start improving your bid today. And some of them are form, some of them are substance. So some of them will deal in the world of ideas and presenting those ideas, and some of them will be more around the presentment of those ideas as well. And as with most things in life, there's good news and bad news. So first, the bad news. The bad news is that no one woke up this morning looking forward to reading your proposal. And many on the call may be chuckling, many may already realize that, but there's not a single person involved in the process that is going to read every word of the proposal or proposals that you're working on right now. And that includes not only the people in your building or in your organization working on the document, it includes the decision maker or decision makers. It includes the assistant to the decision maker. It includes the assistant to the assistant to the decision maker. It includes the person photocopying the document. And it includes the guy in the mailroom who delivers it in the first place. Now, the other bad news is that no one will ever read every word of your proposal. So even the people who do pick it up are not going to read it in that manner. So now that we know that, we're going to start with the very first item. And it's the old adage, you can't judge a book by its cover. And before we go further with that, I just want to tell a story about someone who used to work for us in the office here, who still works with us as a contractor, a lady who came to us after working as a receptionist at a school board in a very small town here in New Jersey outside of Philadelphia. And she relayed a story to me when she was here that when she was the receptionist at this school board, a district office, once in a while, someone would hand her a stack of 20 documents and they would say to her, these are proposals for a particular service or product. Pick out a few good ones for us to look at. And this is someone who was just out of school, who was generally fulfilling the duties of a receptionist, who was told to create a short list because the people involved in decision making were not going to look at 20 documents so that they could shortlist 5 or 6 of them and decide which was the best one. So they had her do it. And what we take from that is that people are always trying to shorten the time that they have to be involved in this process, whether it be working on the proposal or reviewing the proposal. And what that means is that we should always be conscious that your first impression is a very important one, and that's the cover of your proposal. So while you cannot judge a book by its cover, you certainly can judge a proposal by its cover. And I'm not saying judging the company as a whole by the cover. I'm saying that the cover of your proposal simply creates an impression that everyone will take from the document and make certain assessments about your company, even without knowing it sometimes, about the company and what kind of company you are. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask everyone to answer a polling question, and I have one question for each slide, and there's only 12 of them. So the question I'm going to ask is going to be, do you like the cover of your organization's proposal? All right. And so I've just turned on the polling feature, and I'm just asking out of curiosity, if I get you to vote real quick, yes or no, do you like the cover of your organization's proposal? And I'll give you all a moment to answer that. So we know that proposals are not books. So while you can't judge a book by its cover, you can certainly judge a proposal by its cover. So the adage itself does not apply. And if you think about it, you can parallel that with other things in business, such as looking at a job applicant. So you may be hiring for a certain job. There may be 2 people who come in for it. One may be polished with proper business attire, and the other may have holes in their jeans and a 4-letter word on their t-shirt. The cover of your proposal is no different. So I would suggest to you that version B on the screen here is the cover that goes just a little bit further, that presents just a little bit more of a professional view of the company, and that actually has symbolism on the cover in the form of the Freedom Tower that shows that the company is a stalwart and a strong performer.
If I can interrupt for 1 second, I'm curious, that particular one also has the ACA logo on it. Do you think like a trade association membership would be something that you'd want to include on a cover as well. Would that help you sort of get past that first sniff test?
Absolutely. And while you point out that the ACA logo is there, there's certainly other logos that people could be using, whether it be PCI or SFDA or any number of other logos, GSA certified, what have you. But certainly that is something that we always encourage people to do more liberally than they typically do it. So the second idea that we're going to cover is this idea that sometimes when people are working on a proposal, I don't simply mean the person directly writing it, but anyone contributing to the process, we sometimes assume the reader knows everything or knows more than we should expect them to know. So let me just relaunch polling here. Okay, let's see if I can choose question two. Sorry about this, folks. I'm learning this tool on the fly. So the second question that we have, does every person in your company know what a scoring model is and what it does? So I'm just going to launch that. And as you're voting on that question, we're going to take a look at some content here. So this is content from a higher education proposal, and it's just a snippet from a page of content. And you'll see that we're generally making the proposal, the creator of the proposal, anonymous. We just don't think it's relevant to the conversation. We're not looking to make anybody look bad. But in this content, what you see is very good content that talks about new business analysis and assigning accounts, talks a little bit about scoring, talks a little bit about skip tracing, and then talks a little bit about level one skip tracing at the beginning of the skip tracing process. And so what we already see in the poll results for this question is that 94% of the people who have responded so far have said that not every person in the company knows what a scoring model is and what it does. So the problem with this content is, although that it touches on the concept of scoring, it assumes that every person reading the proposal already knows what scoring is and already knows what skip tracing is. So it would be very easy, for example, to include an additional sentence that simply says what scoring is, just a very high level eighth grade style sentence that describes just very simply what we're even talking about in the first place. Because I would suggest to you that if 94% of the people on this call work at a company where not everybody even knows what scoring is, we should never assume that everyone reading the proposal knows what scoring is. Because as we know, these evaluation committees are not always made up of people who know everything that you know. Even the most knowledgeable people on the review committee, or the most knowledgeable person, may only know half of what you know. And certainly there will be some people reading proposals, such as the example I gave earlier, who literally know nothing about our industry. So we should always keep that in mind. All right, we'll end that polling question. And we'll go to the third item. So the third item is that we should very simply, when we have a question that we need to answer in an RFP response, first and foremost, we need to answer the question. And it sounds like such a basic thing to say, answer the question, but it's human nature that we sometimes can't see the forest through the trees. So at a minimum, we always tell people that they should just spot check their answers and ask themselves at a very gut level, are we answering the question that has specifically been asked? So the question that we have for those on the call, and this is polling question three, do you assign someone on every bid to simply read to see if each question has actually been answered? So their job is not to do a lot of writing. Their job is not to print out the document. Their job is not to read the executive summary. Their job is only to see, did we answer the question? And so what we'll do is we'll flash some content on the screen. So in this particular example, the question is, provide a description of the bidder's training procedures, including a description of the bidder's process for training, educating staff about updated or newly enacted laws or policies which are relevant to the provision of ABC services. And so what we then find is an answer, and this is a pretty egregious example, but it makes the point that the answer doesn't cover training procedures at all. It starts off with the discussion of accounting policies and procedures, so we're not even answering the question. So they're not describing a training process, and they're not describing the formal way of keeping up with changes to regulations and laws and policies in the industry related to that service. And we see that it looks like it's a pretty even mix here, that a little bit more than half the people responding to that poll question do have someone who looks at whether or not each question is being answered as a part of the bid development process. So that's good. And I just want to take a look and see if there are questions. And again, as Mike may have alluded to earlier, we can take questions at any point during the teleseminar. So just pop open the interface and ask a question, and we'll try to answer those in real time if we can. So the fourth item that we wanted to talk about on this call has to do with quantifying your success. And the fourth polling question that goes along with that is, do you quantify your abilities and results everywhere you can within a proposal that you're working on? And I have a good example to flash on the screen of that if you take a moment to jot down a yes or no answer there. And so the example that we'll use is a company that I'm actually giving an AAA+ to. And this is content from a proposal in the government space. And before we go further with this, I just want to let you in on a secret. And that secret is that of the content snippets that we're looking at on this teleseminar, some of them are winning proposals and some of them are losing proposals. And anyone on this call who has ever worked on proposals a lot knows that there will certainly be times when you submit a really great proposal that doesn't win. And there are certainly other times when a mediocre proposal can carry the day if the number's right and the relationship is there. And so in this particular case, just by looking at the content here, there are 6 different examples of this company quantifying how much work they do. And this is just one example. And we should realize our audience, again, is not going to be made up of people who know as much about your industry as you do. So while this particular company initiates nearly 800,000 phone calls each month, maybe you're not competing with them on a bid you're working on right now. And maybe you make 100,000 phone calls per month. The average person reading this would not know the difference, for example, whether 800,000 is a significant number or 100,000 is a significant number. So we always try to encourage people, it's not just how you do things, but how much or how many. And you can do that with your contact capabilities. You can do that in quantifying the results when you talk about the businesses that you're in and the clients that you have. You can do that in quantifying certain things about your technology and about your training. You can do that certainly in the compliance area. So for example, are you tracking and quantifying how many positive emails you get from borrowers and debtors? Are you tracking testimonials that you're getting from clients and saying how many of those that you get per year? So there are many different things that you can quantify. And we find that to be a significant area of improvement that many companies could find some additional value in their bid process if they simply quantified more of their success rather than simply telling people, we can do this, we can do that, we can do the third thing, give them a sense of how big the operation is and how successful it's been through quantifying. So the fifth item that we were planning to talk about is something that a lot of people already know on this call, but that simply does not happen enough in the bid process. And that is that repetition is the heart of sales. So my polling question is, do you consistently identify a main theme in each bid, and do you make that the focus of the entire response? So we'll open that poll question. And we're going to look at a couple of different examples for this item. It's such a significant item. And the first item we're going to look at, and I will zoom in on this a little bit. I know it's very small. So we have an executive summary here. And in this executive summary, and I think you'll see the animation on this. I'm going to just trigger that animation. Let's do that next. And now it's in yellow. So we've highlighted in yellow no less than 8 things that the executive summary mentions as being significant reasons why they should be selected for this bid. So we're mentioning the fact that they're a leader in the industry. We're mentioning ethics, reliability, focusing on the client's need, high recovery rates, robust compliance management, state-of-the-art resources, affordable yet effective, and complete online reporting. And those are just the ones that I highlighted. All right. And we all probably know the difference between a feature and a benefit, and the feature being this is part of your service. The benefit is obviously the thing that you want that results from the feature of the service. So what I would suggest to you is that this executive summary does not present a cohesive theme describing why the vendor should be selected. Because ultimately, the question is, when does 8 equal 0? So 8 equals 0 when you ask someone to remember 8 things. Because when you ask someone to remember 8 ideas about your company, you're really inviting them to remember nothing. And so that's why when we help people with the bid process, what we try to tell them is, look, even though there may be 30 different attributes about your company that are amazing, you really need to limit it to 2 or 3 reasons why they should hire you for a particular bid. Because by limiting what you're asking people to focus on, you're maximizing the likelihood that they're going to remember it in the first place. And it looks like a little bit more than half the people here don't always consistently identify a main theme, and that does not surprise me. So another example we'll take a look at, and this is still under the category of repetition is the heart of sales. Let's just go to the second example. Now here's a different example. And if I zoom in on this, what we see is that this executive summary does what we said the first one did not do. It asks the reader to remember 3 things. Strategy, and if you read this, what they're really talking about is a customized work treatment strategy at the account level. Compliance, and how important compliance is in their the value they provide to the client. And the experience of their people. Now, that is a good thing. And it's a good thing in the sense that although many companies talk about these 3 things, at least in the executive summary, they're saying, look, this is what we're hanging our hat on. Here are 3 things that if you forget anything else, everything else about what we've submitted, please remember these 3 things. And what we're saying about this is that it's also close, but no cigar. And why is that? And that goes to this idea of what is an executive summary. So the first example we looked at was a very disjointed one-page executive summary that lacked a lot of cohesiveness. It just was a compilation of facts about the company. This is a good executive summary because what it says is, if you remember nothing else, remember these 3 things. But it should be considered a prelude to everything else that the reader is about to read. So on the next slide, what we're going to look at are a couple of answers from the same document. And the answer is in a question. The first one here, contractor must provide a written quality control guarantees in all operating areas and the most current quality report. And their answer, although they said in their executive summary that compliance and compliance management and auditing was one of the three main reasons they should be hired, they simply say in one sentence that they have an extensive quality and compliance program. So that's clearly a case where there was a missed opportunity to reinforce a theme that was already identified in the executive summary and correctly identified in the executive summary as one of the main value propositions in the bid response. And separately, they ask, what can your firm do for us that that other agencies cannot? And we see a second missed opportunity. So what I was hoping to read here was simply a restatement of the same three ideas that we saw in the executive summary. So instead, we see a very generic answer that they're a partner, they provide insight, they provide value-added suggestions, customer retention, full-service business provider, and they can do first-party and third-party work on behalf of their clients. And I assure you that 9 out of 10 people on this call can say all of these things. So instead of taking the opportunity to reinforce the story that they tried to tell and did a pretty good job of telling in the executive summary, they did not tell the story at all. So let me go to the next question here and see if there are any. All right, no open questions. Let's see if we have the next polling question. All right, so the question is, do you have actual photos of your people and facilities in every bid response? So we'll leave that poll question open for people to answer. And so we'll take a look at two examples. And these are from two different documents, two different companies. And really the truth is, a little bit goes a very long way. Now let me just go to my notes on this slide. So we need to keep in mind that what we are selling are intangible business services. When you're going to buy a car, you can go stand in front of the car, you can sit in the car, put your hand over the paint job, play with all the features, and even take it for a test drive. We have become an economy where it's very easy for people to do business with one another in different parts of the country. So whether it be in government or higher ed or any industry, there's no reason, for example, why a company in California needs to fly out the decision maker who happens to be in Nebraska, although that does still happen, of course. And particularly in the bid process, there is no opportunity for the evaluation team to come out and see your site and see what you have to offer. And I have probably visited two or three dozen call centers over the years. And as we all know, there are some very good ones with, you know, very good facilities and some not so good ones. So I would suggest that the bid process is an amazing opportunity to actually show people what they're buying. Because if you think about it, they're never going to see it unless you put it in front of them. Now, this may happen after you already have the business. You may fly out a government official or they may fly out, or a student loan client may come and see your office. But in the bid process, certainly there's not an opportunity to see what you have to offer. And that could be how clean and well-organized your IT room is. That could be, you know, maybe you have a gym on site for employees, maybe you have childcare on site for employees, but you have to show people what you have to offer, particularly in the bid process when it's a very rote process, unless you actually show them what you have to offer. And in the case on the left, the vendor actually showed the evaluation team, this is how far we are from your office. And so we always encourage people to do that. And it looks like close to 70% of the respondents on this call are not using actual photos of their people and their facilities in every bid response. All right, I see no questions. We'll just keep going. Skimmers are people too. And I guarantee you, I know I'm a skimmer when I need to be, and I'm sure everyone on this call at times needs to look at a document, could be a proposal, could be something else, and for whatever reason, they only have an opportunity to skim the document. And so the next question we have in the polling, do you use call outs to make sure people skimming your proposal see key ideas. So we'll open up that poll question and we'll just take a look at an example. So although there are lots of different ways to incorporate photos into your documents, you could use photos of your actual facility, but there are billions of stock photos out there of call centers that you can always use to help make your document more attractive, simply to provide a way or an opportunity to make key ideas stand out. So for example, if you're the incumbent on a contract, you should have a call out probably 3 or 4 times in the same document, maybe even with the same photo, that says XYZ company has had this contract for 9 years and we have recovered X amount of dollars, or we have delivered XYZ results. Remember, not every person reading the document may even remember that you're the incumbent. They may not be aware that much of that business deed. They may simply have been asked to be on the evaluation committee. So even if you're not the incumbent, revert back to what we said on the executive summary. If you're saying that you're going to be the low-cost provider, mention that a few times. If you're saying that your technology is better than anyone else's, make sure that your call-outs support that. So if you have training modules that are web-based, you should have a call-out that shows people that, and that where the font is a little bit bigger, maybe even a different color, so that that stands out. So always make things that you would like to quantify stand out as well, whether it be your results or any part of your operations. And it looks like 80% of respondents here are not using call out today. And it looks like we have a couple of questions. First question, was the photo on the right an actual photo or a stock photo? The answer is that on screen now, it looks like it's probably a stock photo, but I'm not quite sure. It could be either. But in many cases, the person reviewing it, if you have professional photography done of your office, even if you use an occasional stock photo, they may not know that it's a stock photo if your other photos are of the same level of quality. Second question, some RFPs actually say they discourage colorful aesthetics in the response. How do you balance images, photos, and call-outs with this sort of guidance? Great question, and thank you for that, Huntley. So we always try to encourage people to look for that. If they are saying that they only want to see words on the page, then we always encourage people to take them at their word and play that down a little bit. Now, that doesn't mean you can't put pie charts in. That doesn't mean if there's a bar graph showing your results over time, you can't put that in. But I think usually when we see that, what people are talking about, they do not want puffery, or they don't want colorful graphics that are not providing any additional value. So in this case, even the call out on screen, XYZ provides a wide selection of standard, customized, and ad hoc reports. That might be an item that would be discouraged in an RFP process where they're saying, look, let's just keep the aesthetics to a minimum. But you can still do call outs even if you don't attach a photo to it. So we would generally advise people to only shy away from that kind of thing when they specifically see something discouraged in the bid process. We have another question, and thank you for the questions, by the way. Is it better to use non-professional photos of office or staff taken with a phone or an employee camera or stock photos? I would say that it's better to include photos than not to include photos. So that's first. And what I mean by that is, if you're not using any stock photos, but you have someone who kind of knows how to take a photo and they know how to use light, even with one of these camera phones, right? They're really good cameras these days. And if you put one in the hands of someone who knows how to take a photo, that's probably as far as it needs to go. What we do discourage people from doing is using a lot of really poor photos taken with a phone. If the lighting's really bad, or if the person just doesn't know how to take a photograph, because that can detract from the response. But generally, you know, there's going to be somebody in the office who's really good at taking photos, and that's the person you want taking the photos. But there are always professional photographers you can engage and typically they'll let you have the JPEGs, and you know, you might spend hundreds or even a few thousand dollars to get professional photos of the office, but you're going to use those for a period of years. Okay, so it looks like 80% of the people here are not using callouts. So let's take a look at number eight. And this has to do with linking external content. And this is specifically when you're submitting something that's electronic. So in this question, do you link to external content when your bid submission is electronic? So this is specifically when you are submitting a PDF, for example. Unless there are very particular statements made in the RFP about not submitting anything that they haven't asked for, then there's no reason, for example, that you couldn't have a video collage taken of what your company is all about. Because although they may not want you to attach a 10-page brochure that is full of puffery, if you have the wherewithal to create a video collage of your office and it's simply a link in your bid, then that is something that you can submit, and the people may click on it if they're looking at it electronically, or they may not. But you can use linking in your PDF to link to external reports. Maybe there are press releases that relate to the type of business that you're trying to win. Maybe there are press releases related to some corporate citizenship initiative or PR initiative that you've done. Maybe there's something proprietary that you've created or done that you'd like people to see more about. Maybe it's an interview with your CEO. So if you can think it, you can link it. And as a quick example, it looks like almost 80% of the people who have completed that poll question are not doing anything like that today. And as a quick example, we have an example here of a company that, and there are a lot of companies using avatars these days, but you can easily embed links in here so that you can click on them and launch, for example, a video showing what that avatar is and how it makes it easier to communicate with consumers. So the next question, let's see if we have additional questions here. Looks like we've answered all the open questions. The next question we have in polling, do you use bookmarking in PDF submissions? And we'll let that question appear on the screen. And this is what I would call form, not substance. And here's what we mean by that. Let me just show what we're talking about here. So this slide reminds me of a movie that came out probably at least 10 years ago, maybe closer to 15 years ago, a movie called Catch Me If You Can. And anyone who has seen that might remember, that was a movie with Leonardo DiCaprio and Christopher Walken was his father. And it's based on a true story of a guy who was writing bad checks. And he was involved in check fraud in the 1960s and 70s. And he ultimately went to jail, but ended up working for the FBI. But there's a famous scene in that movie that I love, and it reminds me of this slide, where the father has the son pose as his limo driver, and they're going to do something at a bank where they're fraudulently obtaining a loan or something. And he's doing this with his father. And after telling his son how he should stand on the street and pose as the limo driver while he goes into the bank, Christopher Walken says to his son, "Do you know why the Yankees always win?" And his son says, "Because they have Mickey Mantle, Dad?" And Christopher Walken replies, "No, it's because they can't stop looking at the pinstripes on the Yankees uniforms." And actually, there's another variation of that that I won't use on this call. But if you haven't seen the movie, it's a great movie. And what we mean by that is this is a very small thing, but everything you do in the bid process affects people's perception of your company and how you look. So when you're doing an electronic bid submission, particularly if it's a PDF, you can build into the process, bookmarks on the left. So instead of asking people to slowly scroll through a 100-page document, for example, anything you want to bookmark so that they can immediately jump to it, you can do. So that could be the sections of your response. That could even be specific ideas in the response. So for example, if there's 10 sections to the bid, you could put those 10 sections in as bookmarks But if there are five things you want them to really see, you can use bookmarks to make those jump out. They click on the bookmark and they go right to that answer in the bid. So if you have a paragraph in there that says, we have served you for 20 years and, you know, increased your recovery rates by 50%, you could put that as a bookmark. They click on it, they go right to page 74, and they're reading that instantaneously. So we always encourage people to pay attention to the little things in the bid process. And it looks like 2/3 of people on this call are not currently using bookmarking in PDFs. So now the 10th item, and this is where we sort of cross over into making people more aware of what's available on the MyGovWatch site. And that is, do you have a way to consistently study what competitors are saying in their bid responses? So what I'm going to just launch that poll question. Do you have a way to consistently study what competitors are saying in their bid responses? And so instead of showing you a snippet of content, I'm just pulling up a screen from the MyGovWatch website. And in the MyGovWatch website, what's available to companies in the ARM industry, and soon in the call center industry as well, even if you do call center or debt collection or both, you have the ability to look up documents that are submitted in response to these government RFPs, because every last one of them is a public record, no different than skip tracing data that helps you find borrowers and debtors. Proposal submissions are public record, and those are being compiled on the MyGovWatch website. So what you're able to do on the site, and what you're able to do even if you don't use the site, you're able to complete open records requests to get copies of winning proposals for particular bids. And you can do that. And sometimes you might have to write a check for $200 or $300. Sometimes you might have to follow up with John in the records department 15 times over the course of 9 months and get the document. But what we're doing on the site is we're compiling all of these documents every time one of these bids comes out. So 1 minute, you could do a search for every winning proposal in higher ed west of the Mississippi. And another, you could say, show me winning proposals from a particular company and only show them to me over the last 2 years. And instantly you will see that you have access to documents that meet whatever specific criteria that you're looking for. And it looks like 87% of respondents on this call do not have a fast and easy way to consistently know what their competitors are saying in bid responses. So next, study the competition, but study their pricing. And so I'm going to ask question number 11. Do you have a way to consistently know how others are pricing specific bids? So this is not meant to ask, do you know on a one-off basis what somebody offered on a bid? Or do you kind of remember what a particular company does? Do you have a sustainable way of knowing how the competition is pricing their bids? And so far, it looks like a large percentage of respondents are saying that they don't have that way. And so on the MyGovWatch website, in the same area in the vendor center, we have been databasing every line item price of every company that has ever submitted a higher education or public sector bid for the last 10 or 11 years. And so you can do very granular searches on the site. So one moment you could say, show me self-pay pricing for healthcare where the balance is $2,000. And the next you could say, show me Bull City Financial Solutions pricing as it relates to student loans lifetime to date. And so there are literally dozens of ways you can do those searches by state or even by entity type. So show me pricing for state bodies where taxes are involved, and those prices simply appear on your screen. So that is another way that we encourage people to improve their bid results, is to study the competition in terms of pricing and find a way, either through open records requests or through a site like ours, to know how the competition is pricing their bids. And it looks like close to 90% of respondents here do not have a consistent way to do that now. So the final idea, And here we are. Mike, I promised you we would be about 45 minutes, and we're just about.
You were right on.
So poll question number 12. And actually, we have two different poll questions. And I'm gonna answer this one. This is probably the more appropriate one. Do you or does someone in your household regularly use coupons? And so what I'd like you to do is answer that question, and we'll take a look at what we have on the screen. And this is the last example. This is just the pricing page from a bid that I sort of pulled out yesterday. And they're very simply asking the bidder to propose a rate collected through the normal process and a rate collected through the legal process. And so my focus is not the 22%. My focus is the fact that the alternative proposal section has been left completely blank. All right. And so just for fun, I decided to plug something in. And what I decided to plug in were two different things that this company could have put into their proposal or into the pricing section of their proposal that would certainly not necessarily win the bid. We don't know if 22% in this context is competitive. But what it would do is it would put in the reviewer's mind that this company is a little different. This company is really looking to earn the business. This company is offering some incentive that that they may take advantage of so that there's an opportunity to save a little bit. Because even if only half the people on this call use coupons, I guarantee you that half the people who are reviewing these bids also use coupons and may be attracted enough to some kind of incentive to put that proposal in the shortlist pile. So what I would ask anyone on this call is, what are we really losing? What are we gaining and what are we losing by doing this kind of thing? What we're gaining is the advantage of people looking at us just a little bit differently at a moment when they might be trying to compile the shortlist. And what we're losing in this case is very little, because we know not that many payments by and large would come in over the first 3 days of placement. And in the second example, you may not even get an account placement for the 30 days after you sign a contract with all the setup things that you have to do, but it may gain you some advantage in the bid process. So we believe that people fundamentally, or at least many of them, love coupons, and this kind of thing has been successful, and we've seen it be successful time and again. And it looks like it's exactly 50-50, if you could imagine. By the way, I don't use coupons, but my wife does. And there's your 50% in our marriage as well. All right. So we have all of our questions answered, at least for polling. And so what I'm going to do is just go to this last slide here. And this would be, Mike, when I would just turn it over to you for any additional comments or question and answer. And I'm sort of watching the questions people are typing, Mike, and I can tell you that we're caught up on those, but I'm going to turn it over to you and we'll do a wrap up.
Well, thank you, Nick. That was really, really cool. I really appreciate the comprehensiveness of the presentation. It was really interesting to delve into RFPs to the degree that you did. And I'll give people a chance, you know, to type out any last minute questions before we wrap up, and I'll ask one of my own. A lot of the data that came out of these poll questions was really kind of interesting. And I know you were in the process of giving your presentation and sort of getting through everything, but I'm curious, was there any particular data point out of those poll questions that really sort of struck you as the most outlier, to use your word from earlier in the webinar, that surprised you the most?
Yeah, it's actually the last question. And as you can imagine, I did not necessarily use what I learned in any journalism classes to create these questions. They were certainly sales-oriented questions. But the last question, do you or does someone in your household regularly use coupons? I'm shocked to read that only half the people on this call live in a household where no one uses coupons. But I take everyone at their word. But that one surprised me the most, because I just assume in the average household, someone must be using a coupon, but that was interesting to me.
See, it's interesting. Well, I thought that was interesting as well. And I know you sent me these questions and we preloaded them in advance. And I was curious, where you were going to go with this question, or sort of how it was going to apply to the conversation. So it was really interesting to sort of see that those kind of incentives do work with respect to helping companies win RFPs.
We see it. And a certain amount of this is that there's, and often in companies, there's not one person, well, certainly larger companies, there are multiple people who are dedicated to the RFP process. But in many companies, there's not a single person dedicated to the process. So it's easy to just be so stuck in the drudgery of putting the document together that you may forget that to look at things like this and to consider doing them. And that's really the mindset we're always encouraging people to get out of, is consider doing these things whenever you can.
What would make me a bad bid writer is that, you know, I tend to be very lazy. So I can see myself just sort of copying and pasting over and over again as, you know, different parts or different pieces from different templates. And that's probably not the right way to go about doing that.
Well, there's always a copying and pasting element. So the way we look at it is you want to have your content sort of stashed away so that 80% of it is copy and paste. But you want to be able to do that as efficiently as possible so that the 20% that's not copy and paste, you really can focus on that because you got through the copy and paste stuff so quickly.
Good tip. Well, I don't see any other questions that have come in. So if there's anything else, I mean, maybe what I'd like you to do is just take a second and either summarize, you know, all of the great information today, or if there's anything you didn't get a chance to talk about that maybe you wanted to, or any sort of final talking points.
Absolutely. I would just like to thank everybody for joining the call. I know it's not easy it's easy to sign up for teleseminars. It's not always easy to make them. It looks like we had a high percentage of people who were able to make it. So thank you for joining. Yep. You can see on the screen that you are able to create a free account on the website. And if you contact me by the end of the month, I can give you a promo code. And what that would do is that would let you download a set of results from any bid process that's on our website in the debt collection space. So you may have been on something from 6 months ago. We can give you a promo code to download those documents. And that is if you contact me. And then finally, what we're working on in the bid space coming soon. And we're calling this, and this is not the product name, Uber for Bid Writing. So what we're going to be doing with the website is extending it and creating a database of bid writers, because what we found is a small percentage of our business, we're actually helping people write bids and we've never been able to meet the demand. So we're going to be building into the website the ability for bid writers, freelancers to create profiles on the site and match them with companies that are looking for help with bid writing. So that's coming later this year.
Wow, very cool. I will say, like I said at the beginning, I have signed up. I do get the emails every day with the leads. I think it's really cool. And I have looked at actually buying some credits for some of the things. So that's a great offer. So Nick, thank you very much for your time today. Really appreciate not just the quantity, but the quality of information. Also, thank you again to mygovwatch.com for sponsoring. Please go to mygovwatch.com to learn more about the company and to sign up. Thanks to everybody who asked questions and participated. And a recording of this event will be up on the site hopefully in the next day or so. So feel free to access either the audio or video recording to take advantage of some of this great information today. Nick, thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Mike.
Take care, everybody.